Hey all, thank you for tuning into Women Birders Happy Hour. My name is Hannah. I'm a birder, a woman, and someone that enjoys a good drink after a long day of birding. Women have been integral to birding since it started, but we haven't always been recognized for the contributions and impact we have. Men have dominated the guiding scene, festival circuit, leadership positions, and publications. And according to a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service 2011 report, in the U.S., there were over 47 million birders. The majority of these birders are college educated, they are white, they are women, and mostly are over the age of 55. And if you put all these factors together, we create the typical birder, a white, college educated woman over the age of 55. And that's a demographic that I often see out birding, but I don't as frequently see as a speaker, a guide, or sole publisher. Additionally, the voices of all women, BIPOC, and LGBTQ+ birders are not well represented in the birding voices we hear from. So I created this show to bring in more voices. Not to say that some of the regular festival keynotes aren't great, but there is room for others. And on the show, I'm asking everyday women from all walks of life to join me to discuss their experiences, their resources, and advice that they have for others. And I want you to remember that just because you may not have experienced some of these things, like sexism or gatekeeping, doesn't mean that they aren't real issues that others face. And because some of these conversations are best had over a cocktail or a mocktail, I also create a unique cocktail for each guest in case you want to mix yourself a drink and join us for this chat. I love how the joy of birds and birding can be involved in so many facets of life. And I guess most hobbies are probably that way. However, I think everyone can connect with birds in some way, whether they become a far-flung traveler or a casual observer and everywhere in between. And I think how Geraldine incorporates birding into her work is just really cool, so I'm excited to share that with you. And she's even been working on an upcoming book that will help connect kids with birds. So the most colorful waterfowl in North America is a wood duck. They're a medium-sized perching duck that's just a little bit smaller than a mallard. The adults are stunningly colored with iridescent plumage and red eyes. And the females are less colorful, but they have the same boxy, crested head of the males with a white eye ring and throat. They breed in wooded swamps, marshes, ponds, and creeks in the eastern U.S. and west coast, with small numbers bleeding into Mexico and Canada. Their sharp claws help them perch in trees, and that's where they nest, in tree cavities that are close to water, but will also take advantage of nest boxes. And competition for nest cavities can cause them to nest almost a mile away from their water source. And after hatching, that's where it's kind of a big deal. The ducklings leap out of their nest cavity to their mother, who is calling from below, and they follow her to water, where they will swim and find their own food. And wood ducks are dabblers, but they will also graze and look for things like berries, acorns, seeds, and insects. And the species was in serious decline due to severe habitat loss and hunting for meat and feathers. By the beginning of the 20th century, wood ducks were almost extirpated from most of their historic range, but the Migratory Bird Treaty, which was established in 1916, helped the species recover. Implementing artificial nest boxes in the 1930s also helped the population grow, and the recovery of beavers helped to boost the population because beavers create forested wetlands, which are ideal for wood ducks. So this is a more interesting drink to make. What you need is an ounce of agave nectar or simple syrup, half an ounce of absinthe, 1 ounce of whiskey, 1 ounce lime juice, 3 ounces of chilled water, ice, and then you'll need a garnish of a lime twist and a maraschino cherry. So to make it, what you'll do is fill your rocks glass halfway with ice, add in the absinthe, whiskey, lime juice, water, and nectar. Just stir it slightly and then garnish with that lime twist and a maraschino cherry. So this cocktail was concocted to represent wood ducks with their coloration, the chestnut of the whiskey and the green from the absinthe, but also it reflects on the association of absinthe with a bohemian or an unconventional lifestyle, which is exactly something that can also describe the wood ducks. They are unconventional. Not only are they a stunning bird, but they are also unusual in that they nest in tree cavities. The strong flavors of the absinthe and whiskey are more subtle as they are watered down into this sippable drink. So please grab a glass and enjoy learning more about Geraldine. Geraldine, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. Like I told you a minute ago, you know, I've been following your Instagram account because I'm so excited about your book. But before we get into that, would you please just tell everyone who you are?
Okay. Thank you, Hannah, for having me here. I'm different in terms of the people that you invite. I'm a child psychologist, and I help children deal with their anxiety, depression. I even, you know, assess kids for giftedness and learning differences. Prior to private practice, I was an associate director and professor for the Institute of the Study of Child Development. Like you mentioned, I'm a children picture book author and also doing comic strips as well with my adventures in birding and also doing therapy with kids because it is an adventure. For about 45 years, I'm an avid birder and bird photographer. So that's my love.
That's awesome. So do you ever prescribe birding for kids?
Actually, I started doing that with some of my clients when we're near like an area that parents could drive through and you see the calm, you see the peace. I have them bring their cameras with them and they would take photographs along with my own camera. And so we really enjoy those moments. Birding is an excellent activity to do everything that I teach kids, but in a very natural way. They don't even have to think about it. I don't have to tell them to take deep breaths or to stand still or to observe and just listen. So those grounding techniques that, you know, psychologists or therapists uses.
My husband, he gets really anxious when he doesn't like get enough activity, you know, and a physical activity. And so every time I see him kind of like pacing around, like really nervous, I'm like, just take your binoculars and go, you know, I know that he needs like to spend some time outside and just like calm down a little bit. So yeah, it's fascinating to see what kind of change that can make in a person.
You know, you're absolutely right about that, right? Because there's two type of people. People who like the calm and the basically the slow activity versus the active, right? So active and climbing, you know, on top of those rocks to see, you know, harlequin ducks, right, at Barnegat Bay. Or, you know, just running, climbing. So those activities are also there for the type of person who wants to be active rather than the quiet and the slow form of coping skills and de-stressing.
Yeah, I'm definitely the slower kind of person. One of my favorite things is to set up my hammock in my backyard and just listen to the swains and thrushes like call around me. And I know he likes to run up cliffs and, you know, try to scope out nests and things like that.
Excellent. So you could see that it's great for everyone, right?
Definitely.
Both the active and the slow and calm.
So tell us your birding origin story.
Ever since I was 10, I love animals. I love drawing them, but my love was drawing birds for some reason. I lived in the city, so, you know, it's very limited with just rock pigeons and your sparrows. So I would draw those. When I got to college, I heard about wildlife refuges, which I never knew. And here in New Jersey, we have an excellent one. It's called the Edwin B. Forsyth Wildlife Refuge, which is a salt marsh. And that's when I fell in love with it. Millions of birds, you know, I've never seen before, from egrets to blue herons to ibis, you know, the glossy ibis. And I loved it. But you would think I wouldn't, because my first experience at the wildlife refuge was in July. And in July, it's like tons of greenheads. So you can't leave the car without being eaten alive, right? But the more insects, the more birds. And so I stayed in the car and just went through the wildlife drive and just watching. It's just gorgeous, gorgeous birds.
That sounds wonderful. I'm going to have to get out there sometime and see all that. We've never been to the Northeast.
Oh my gosh, you have to. And if you do, I'll show you all the great places, including Cape May. You know, during those times in July, you know, when there's a lot of greenheads and insects that's just covering, you know, the refuge, you know, sometimes I wonder, maybe I should wear a hazmat suit. Would that look weird? You know, so that way you could get great photographs of all the birds, but wearing a hazmat suit.
That's a good idea. I'm sure people have done it before, so you wouldn't look too weird. So when you go out birding, what does a day of birding look like for you?
Okay, every weekend, my husband and I, we bird. Sometimes I bring my mom, you know, she's older, but they're great spotters. I bring them with me because they're fantastic spotters. I'm the type of birder that would say, where is it? What do you mean the bird is there? So they help me with that. And so we get up early in the morning at 6. I know most birders get up earlier at 5. And we would, you know, get the camera, get the binoculars, drive to whether it's beaches or refuge, or lakes or ponds. And we would, you know, go birding early in the morning, which I love. And of course, as we're driving, I'm there at Facebook, looking at all the Facebook posts of what the birds are. And that pretty much determines where I'm going to go for that day, especially if there's a rare bird or something beautiful, you know, to capture in photography. So just because I see a bird doesn't mean they go in my life's list. I have to get a great photo or else it doesn't count.
Do you load all your photos on eBird?
No, I don't, actually. Maybe I should. I take thousands.
That's my husband. He took up photography, and so now his big thing is getting a picture. It doesn't have to be a good picture for him, and posting it onto his eBird account. It's like, it doesn't count unless there's a picture on his eBird, you know?
Oh my gosh, that's a great idea. I think I'm going to start that.
So who or what do you feel has been the most influential thing in your birding?
So during my undergraduate studies, in psychology, there was this animal behaviorist. His name is Dr. Colin Beer, and he was from Oxford. He's, you know, the type of professor with a British accent, with a little bow tie. He actually studied under Nico Tinbergen, who is known as one of the founders of ethology, the study of animal behavior, and he studied herring gulls. And Dr. Beer studied laughing gulls. And one of the projects was to study a bird that you would love. And so I did my study on bowerbirds and weaverbirds. Oh, so beautiful. I love it. And so the day that the project was due, he was collecting all these projects, you know, and, you know, I finally gave him mine. And it's as soon as he saw the cover of the bowerbirds, he dropped all the other projects and he was like fascinated. You know, then, you know, we didn't have cut and paste in the computer, right? Technology was not as friendly before, but he is the best influence in my life. He got me to reading Nico Tinbergen stuff, Conrad Lorenz and imprinting. And he told me about the different hotspots in New Jersey in the birding world. But the thing that he studied was gulls. And I have to tell you, Hannah, every time I go birding, if I only see gulls, it's like, there's no birds here. I go to the beach, you know, I've run, right? So I'm an impatient birder. Maybe that should be my nickname. I'm running all over the place. But if there are gulls, they don't count, right? Because, you know, they all look alike. And that's actually one of the other bugs. They all look alike. But now I'm focusing on gulls. Actually, like, let me do what Dr. Colin Beer did. Let me focus on gulls and get to know them. And they're so hard to identify, you know. So I'm getting to learn more about gulls who I've ignored the past 45 years.
So do you have any tips for folks that are also trying to learn about goals?
Oh my gosh, there's a great Facebook page on Northern Gulls, and it's through them where I take a photograph, and because I'm impatient, you know, I would look through the bird identification and still can't figure it out. You know, I post a picture and they'll tell me about it, and they're so enthusiastic about what this bird is, and it's a cross between that and that. And so for me, that is the best. And just sit with them too, because I've learned that they have different personalities, right? You got the aggressive ones who like to fight for food, and you got one who just be sitting there also observing you, and shy ones as well. So they have different personalities, which is cool.
I just finished a book by Carl Safina about animal behavior, and he really notes in there about how every animal, you know, has their own personality. Like, of course, you know, like all elephants are generally going to be, you know, have like similarities between them, but he really does a great job in the book of like seeing the different personalities of the animals that he's watching. So I definitely am a believer in sit with an animal and watch it, because you're going to see something amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. I was surprised, you know, especially when you're at the beach, right? You have, you know, the gulls grab food away from you, and they're very assertive, let's say, right? And then you'll see one beside you just waiting patiently, hoping that you would, you know, throw something at them. It's amazing, the differences.
So I want to talk about your book a little bit. So your main character, tell us about her.
Okay, so Melusine is a avid birder. She's bilingual. She's half French, half Filipino. And so she's bicultural. And there's a mystery bird at the beginning of the story, which she can't identify. And as she's trying to find her mystery bird, she meets other birds along the way, you know, learning their bird song, identifying who they are with her birding book, but also meeting diverse people with diverse languages. And there's a spot in the book, which is a cafe scene, where you see lots of birds, you know, tweeting, chirping, and then also a variety of diverse people who are also speaking different languages. And she makes that connection between biodiversity of birds and the diversity of humans, just like those that she found along the way. And at the end, there's a surprise. She finally finds that bird who's also multilingual. And she realizes, oh my goodness, this bird is just like me. And so in the process of trying to find the mystery bird, she finds her place in the world. So I'm not going to give away what that mystery bird is. So you would have to read the book for that.
So how did you create her? And why did you choose a girl for the main character?
I knew that women was sort of a minority in the birding world, right? They're often not heard. You don't see them in leadership positions. So I really wanted the next generation of girl birders, you know, start them early, get them interested in birding, and, you know, help them find leadership positions, you know, whether it's in the sciences or the birding world. So it was very important for me that it was a girl to, you know, to be my main character, and for her to also be just like the gulls that are difficult to identify. She had to be a mix, because essentially in this world, right, there's probably 85% of the world is bilingual or multilingual. And there's a mix of people, right? When you go to Hawaii, Polynesians, when you go there, they're a mix of a variety of ethnicities. So I wanted to represent the world, you know, with her. And also for myself, as a child psychologist, people don't usually know what my ethnicity is. So I'm Filipino, but I don't get that. I often get, are you Latino? Are you Indian? Are you African American? Are you Chinese? So I get a variety, and I thought, wow, this is cool. And so, you know, my client base is a variety of people, because they can't really tell what ethnicity I am. And so I am proud that I represent, you know, a wide variety of different mixes of people. So I'm pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I'm so excited for your book to come out. But I'm curious, what has been your experience as a woman birder?
So as a woman birder, I never go alone because I'm petite, for one thing. And, you know, going out in the woods, I'm scared of birds, you know, and I'm carrying this, you know, heavy camera. So I feel like it's not really safe for a woman just birding alone. So that's why I often go with my husband. But if I had my way, I'd wake up early. You know, I would love like a group of women, like a breakfast club, to go birding, you know, together. I think would be fun. But also that I am usually the only brown person, let's just say, in the birding world. And I'm just wondering why that is. And maybe it's a lack of exposure too in the activity and what it could do for you. And so I would love to see a variety of people, you know, exposing them to birding and get their interest, you know, going. But the people that I do meet along the way, whether it's men or women, I mean, they're very friendly. And, you know, we share resources, where the birds are, what they've found. And so it helps connect us together. And I love that. You don't have to know each other, but just the mere fact of your birding, you know, brings people together. And it really doesn't matter, you know, your background.
And I think it's really, you know, great that you're out there modeling what a woman birder looks like, because, you know, I did a lot of work in recreation, and they always say like that you feel more comfortable if you see people like you out there doing that. So you're out there inspiring others. You know, they might not start birding, but they might feel more comfortable to be outside because look, there's somebody that's like me that's out there doing it. So that's great. I'm glad you're out there doing it.
Yes.
So what advice would you have for other women birders?
I think they need to go in numbers. You know, even though some birders could be shy and quiet, and that's okay. You know, just as long as, you know, you go with a group, I think it's fun and you get to meet other people, or it forces you to meet other people. But then you could go on your own, but at least, you know, the other women birders are in the vicinity. So, you know, it keeps you safe. I think that's very important. And just inspiring each other with stories and just talking and having lunch together and learning from each other, because there's going to be a variety of experience from very seasoned birders to just beginning birders. So having that mix is always nice.
Yeah, my dream is always to have a group of birders that I can like bird with and then go have a happy hour with.
Me too.
So do you feel that you found your place in the birding community?
Just recently, and it's because of my book. So I've been in a lot of Facebook photography, bird photography books, birding communities. But it's when I found the World Girl Birders Facebook page, who's led by Debbie Love Shearwater, that I found my community. So it's all women birders from around the world who share stories. And they're the ones who actually helped me pick the book cover and who gave me, you know, feedback on the book. And anytime someone posts, we support each other. And I found that's the first time I found that I belonged to a community. I have yet to join a club. I would love to. I know there's the Feminist Club and other groups, Audubon groups, and, you know, I'm hoping to join those as well.
And so you're in New Jersey. What like region of New Jersey are you in?
Central Jersey. That's where I am. So it's right in the middle where I could go birding in the north. And then also it's not too far from Cape May to drive, or Ocean City where there's a rookery. Oh my gosh. You just go there and you find thousands of birds with their nest and their eggs and their babies. It's wonderful.
So if anyone is in Central Jersey, they could reach out to you and say, hey, there's this group you should join.
Yes, absolutely. It's nice to be invited, you know? Yes, I have yet to research like different groups that's close to me. I haven't heard of any yet. So that would be great.
Maybe we'll crowdsource and find you some. So what do you feel has been your most memorable bird or birding experience?
Okay, so this is during my quest for the wood duck. Each year, I'm waiting to photograph the wood duck and can never find them. And when I would look at Facebook posts, oh, wow, it's in Celery Farm or, you know, Lake of the Lilies. So we would drive early in the morning, go there. And knowing myself, I would like run, sprint, look around for it, not the way to go, and never find it. And so finally, I had a trip in Nevada, and there's a place called the Floyd Lamb Park. And I wasn't looking for wood ducks, of course. It's like the heat was scorching, you know, the weather there in Nevada. And so I'm taking pictures of coots and peacocks and other birds. And right where the mallards were, I spot the wood duck. And of course, you always find birds when you're not looking for them. And I had to get that photograph, no matter what. So I crawled in bird poop. It didn't matter. I didn't care where my hands were going. It didn't matter, just as long as I could get close to that bird. And that was the best moment in my life, to finally get the wood duck. And actually, after that photograph, when I was walking along the park, I didn't realize, like, right behind me were three other wood ducks following me. So it was amazing after looking for so many years.
That's cool. And that's just such a gorgeous bird too.
Yes. Yes. I really love that.
So what do you think has been the most valuable thing that you've learned from birding?
Okay. This one is an easy one, because everything that I teach children, you know, to lower their anxiety, their depression, is done in birding without thinking. You know, when you go to a birding site, you're taking deep breaths, you're staying still. Like your husband, you're walking. So that physical activity of climbing, walking, it reduces the anxiety. Grounding techniques, right? You're looking around and you could identify five things that you see, four things that you could hear, or three things you could touch, smell, you know, and taste. Comes naturally in birding, and you don't even have to think about it. And also for kids, they need executive functions, you know, in order to deal with life, right? It's regulating your behavior, your attention, it's organizing and planning. And again, all these things you have to do in birding. And so these things will be featured in some of my books, that with birding, all the things that you need in life is all in birding. And you don't even have to think about it. It's automatic.
Well, that's amazing. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I hadn't even thought of that. It's just automatic, like you said.
Yes.
So if folks want to find out more about you and your upcoming book and the things that you do, how would they do that?
The easiest way is through Instagram at Kitty Winks Publishing. So that's KiddieWinks Publishing.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for sharing all your cool experiences and your upcoming stuff.
Thank you so much, Hannah, for the opportunity to speak with you.
Thank you so much, Geraldine, for joining me for this podcast. I really enjoyed learning more about you, and I can't wait for your book to come out. Like I think I said, before or after or during, I know I'm going to buy a copy for every kid I know and definitely have one on my shelf as well. And thank you all for listening to my podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, or maybe learned something. You can rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Music, and anywhere else you listen to me. If you'd like to connect with me on the socials, you can do so by following me at Hannah Goes Birding on Instagram. My Twitter is at womenbirdershh, or you can email me at womenbirders@gmail.com.